Namachar Hari Das Thakur Ki Jai. Prems Lago Ho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara. Shri Vasudeva Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gaurava Vinash. Shyama Kunda Radha Kuda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Navadip Dham Ki Jai. Ganga Tosi Bhakta Devi Ki Jai. Ananda Bhakti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Lo Premanandi. All glory to the Samal devotees. All glory to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. All glory to Sri Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutade Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nijinamani Namaste Saraswata Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shinyavadi Paschatade Shatarane Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8, 5, Verse 6. Pranadinam Vishvasrajam Shaktayoya Parasyata Paratantriyat Vaishadrasyat Vayos Chestaiva Chestatam. Prana of the life air, Adinam, and so on, Vishva of the universe, Srijam, creative factors, Shaktaya, potencies, Ya, which, Parasya, belonging to the Supreme, Ta, they, Paratantya, because of being dependent, Vaishadrasya, because of being different, Dvayo, of both, Cheshta, activity, Eva, merely, Chastatam, of those entities. Translation, whatever potencies the life air and other elements of universal creation exhibit, are actually all personal energies of the Supreme Lord. For both life and matter are subordinate to Him and dependent on Him, and also different from one another. Thus, everything active in the material world is set into motion by the Supreme Lord. Purport prana is the vital air of life, a more subtle element than the ordinary air we can touch. And because prana is so subtle, finer than the tangible manifestations of creation, it is sometimes considered the ultimate source of everything. But even subtle energies such as prana depend for their functional capacity on the supremely subtle Paramatma. That is the idea Vasudeva expresses here by the word paratamchyat, because of dependence. Just as the velocity of an arrow is derived from the strength of the bowman who shoots it, so all subordinate energies depend on the power of the Supreme Lord. Furthermore, even when various subtle causes have been empowered with their capacity to act, they cannot act in concert without the Supersoul's coordinating direction. As Lord Brahma states in his description of creation in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Yadaite Sangata Bhava Utendriya Manoguna Yadayatana Nirmane Na Sekur Brahma Vittama Tada Samhatya Chanyonyam Bhagavat Chakti Chodita Sat Asatvam Upadahya Chobayam Sastraju Kyada. O Narada, best of the transcendentalists, the forms of the body cannot manifest as long as these created parts, namely the elements, senses, mind, and modes of nature, are not assembled. Thus, when all these become assembled by the force of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this universe certainly came into being by accepting both the primary and secondary causes of creation. Translation: whatever potencies the life, air, and other elements of universal creation exhibit are actually all personal energies of the Supreme Lord, for both life and matter are subordinate to Him and dependent on Him, and also different from one another. Thus, everything active in the material world is set into motion by the Supreme Lord. So here, there is mention of the Shaktis of the Supreme Lord. And they're actually considered to be dependent on the Supreme Lord. They are of a great variety, and also different from the Supreme Lord, and they're also dependent upon the Supreme Lord. So it is due to these Shaktis that we get the manifestation of the material world. And here we have talk of pranas, etc. Of course, prana is not directly the element. Element is air element. So we have five gross elements. And we get mind, intelligence, false ego, etc., and sense objects. So generally prana is not considered one of those elements, but it's actually a byproduct or a transformation of the air element. Air element also is not exactly this air, it's more subtle. Just as the water element is not the water that we know of, and the earth element is not the earth element, it's a little bit different. It's only when these combine together in certain proportions that we get air as we know it, or water as we know it, and earth as we know it. So in any case, it's very subtle. Even the gross element is quite subtle in itself. So a transformation of that air element is the prana. So prana has a particular function. It is, we can say, how the air operates within the body to support the body. So we have five major pranas and five secondary pranas in the body, made out of that air element, and they function in different ways. And they support the body. Of course, they're very subtle, so they're not like the gross elements. They're very, very subtle.
and we can say they're part of the subtle body, actually. So it's described in the story of Paramjana how when he left his body, he took his senses and his pranas with him. So they're also, they go with the subtle body when you die, and then they enter into your next body. So the pranas are responsible for the how the body operates. So we generally don't think of how the body's going on, how the breathing and the blood circulates and digestion happens and all this. It's going on more or less automatically, but to help that function, we have the pranas. So they support the body in all those different functions throughout the day and night. And in this way, life continues in terms of material body. So that's why prana also means life, air, or whatever, because it supports the life itself. So the life air, very important. But apart from the life air, of course, we have other aspects of creation, all the gross material elements, which have to combine in a specific manner to function. And we have sense objects, the so-called qualities of the different elements, such as form and taste and smell and touch and hearing, etc., sound. And we also have the senses. They're also elements. Yeah? So the eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, etc., and the voice and stomach and hands and feet, etc. These are all senses. Also, they are elements, subtle elements. And we have even devatas, who are also considered material elements. So we have mind devata, that's the chandra. And then we have all the other different devatas in charge of the different senses, like the voice is called Agni, is the devata in charge. So each of the senses has a devata in charge of it. And of course then we have the subtle body with the mind, intelligence, false ego, and we have the devatas there also for intelligence and false ego, like Shiva in charge of false ego. So we have devatas, we have senses, we have sense objects, we have gross material objects, and we have the pranas, etc. These are all elements. In the second canto, it's described how they combine into the universal form, which is a body, like a person. And then they're supposed to function. The eye is there and the nose, etc. But they can't really function on their own. When the Supreme Lord enters, then the eye can see, the tongue can taste, the ear can hear. So in other words, when the Paramatma is in relation to the material elements and the sense objects and the devatas, etc., they cooperate together so that the universal form can see. Okay? So we have a sense there, like the eye. Okay? We have the sense object form, and we have the devata, sun, surya. So without the Paramatma there, no sight. The function doesn't go on between the devata and the sense object and the eye. When Paramatma enters, then that eye can see. The relationship between the devata and the eye and the sense object operates, and the eye can see forms. Similarly for all the other senses. So in other words, everything, all these elements function in relation to Supreme Lord. Of course, this is a secondary feature of the Lord, this Paramatma feature. Now, of course, the universal form is more or less symbolic. But we can take that as for all the bodies in the material world, they cannot function and use their senses unless Supreme Lord is there. Generally, we say, okay, it all depends on the Atma, but behind the Atma is Supreme Lord. So if he's not there, even the Jiva can do nothing on his own. So the idea is that all the material elements are there for a certain purpose. And what is that purpose? To make bodies for living entities, gross and subtle, so that they can enjoy in the material world. We have sense objects and senses, and David is there so they can perceive things and get their little enjoyment. Yeah? So in other words, all the material elements are produced to form bodies so that the living entities can enjoy in the material world. Yeah? No, but they can't do so unless Supreme Lord is also there. Yeah? So that is graphically represented by the description of the universal form and how it cannot function without the presence of the soul within that body, that is the Paramatma. So, the same is expressed here where we have all the elements, etc., of the universe, pranas, etc., and all the elements. And they're all Shaktis of the Lord. Of course, ultimately, they are all Bahiranga Shakti, external energy of the Lord, Maya Shakti. So that the Maya Shakti starts out very simple, Prakriti, and then it expands into all these different elements, and the elements combine. That expansion itself takes place by the glance of the Supreme Lord. Without his glance, nothing happens. So that each stage, the manifestation of the material world and all the bodies in the material world depend upon the presence of the Supreme Lord and his will. So in this way, everything is dependent on the Lord. It comes from the Lord and it operates by the Lord. Everything in the material world. This is, of course, part of the definition of the Supreme Lord mentioned previously, that everything is in him, everything is by him, everything is from him, everything is for him, etc. Everything belongs to him. All these aspects are represented here in these verses. The Shaktis are there, but they are dependent. They have no independence. They depend upon the Lord to operate properly in this material world. So ultimately, Shakti means dependence. There are some theories where Shakti is independent, but we say Shakti is not independent. It depends on the Shaktiman, possessor of the Shakti. So ultimately, all Shaktis are derived from Supreme Lord. So he's called the Shaktiman. And then he has his energy. So energy is just another way of saying that the Lord has means by which he can accomplish everything. So his means of accomplishing creation of a material world is through his Shakti. That is Bahiranga Shakti. So part of, that we can say part of it is that material, the substance, matter, all these different elements, etc. That's part of the Bahiranga Shakti. Another part is the subtle part. That is time and karma. They're not actually substance, but they are intimately related with matter in the material world. We don't have matter without time and karma. It's automatically there. So and it's also part of the Maya Shakti or the Bahiranga Shakti. So the Shakti means depends on the Supreme Lord, cannot act independently. So that goes not only for the Bahiranga Shakti, we also have the Jiva Shakti and the Antaranga Shakti, internal energy, all ultimately dependent on the Lord. They come from him, they are in him, they belong to him, etc., for his own purposes. So all these Shaktis are operating under the Supreme Lord. What this illustrates is this whole statement is here to show that the Lord actually is independent of everything and different from everything. So here it mentions Paratantra and Vaisadrasa, different. It's dependent on the Lord and different from the Lord. So particularly the material energy, this Bahiranga Shakti, is very different from the Lord because it's not even conscious. It's not chit. It's completely inert in itself. The chit shakti is chit, fully conscious. It's quite similar to the Lord, but this is very different from the Lord. So that spiritual energy also is dependent on the Lord. And that distinguishes it from the sarup of the Lord. It's dependent on Him, but quite similar to the Lord. This is very different from the Lord, being achit, dependent, and also very different from the Supreme Lord, not chit at all. However, we could say, well, how does this material energy operate then? It has to have the Lord there doing everything all the time. The answer is, there's another energy, the tattvastha shakti, the jivas. So they combine with matter, and which is achit. And then we can say that matter has a little bit of a consciousness in the form of the jiva within it. So when Mahavishnu wants to manifest the material worlds, he injects the jivas into Prakriti. And then immediately it transforms into Mahatattva and begins to glow because of the consciousness of the jivas there. So it seems to transform immediately by contact with the jivas. So when we have jiva in contact with matter, then we get material bodies. So these material bodies, these are the active portion of the material world. If we have a whole material creation and no bodies at all, no life forms there, what is the use of it? Just a bunch of rocks everywhere, elements maybe, but nothing there. Rocks and water and elements and nothing there. A very barren looking. There's no trees, there's no plants, there's no animals, nothing there. So the material world is full of life. And that's what gives it this great variety. So we get animals and plants and human beings and devatas and all sorts of creatures on different levels of the universe. And that creates a lot of variety within the universe and a lot of variegated activity, because it's due to these living creatures interacting that we get a lot of the actions of the world taking place. Of course, for the jiva, what is that purpose? Enjoyment. They all get a material body and they start acting and doing things and interacting and getting their happiness. Whole purpose is for the jivas, so they can try to get their happiness. So all this arrangement is here. We have the Bahiranga Shakti, and then we have the Jiva Shaktis there within it that sort of animate the material world. And behind that we have Supreme Lord. So everything is ultimately dependent on the Lord. The Jiva Shakti is dependent on the Lord, and the Bahiranga Shakti completely dependent on the Lord. And then he combines the two together, the Jiva Shakti and the external energy, Bahiranga Shakti, and we get material world going on, days of Brahma, lives of Brahma, etc. So, all under Supreme Lord. But Supreme Lord also completely separate. It goes on. Of course, we have Paramatma here supervising, advising, permitting, observing everything in the material world. But at the same time, the Lord is completely independent in the spiritual world, completely involved in his pastimes there. So he's completely separate from the material world. And to separate it, we have this Viraja river in between. So there's two distinct places, material world, spiritual world. And in that world, of course, the Lord is not, no connection with Prakriti at all. So we can say, well, why does he come to the material world at all? He doesn't really have to. He can do it simply by direction or whatever like that. But that direction takes the form of Paramatma, Mahavishnu, Garbhadaksha, Kshiradaksha, Vishnu, And why does he do this? Because he is trying to fulfill his purpose. And that is, wants to give the jivas their desire of enjoyment, and at the same time, take them out of the material world and put them in the spiritual world. So he is not indifferent to the material world. So therefore he pervades it in all ways, but completely untouched by it. So that is the position of the Supreme Lord. We can try to analyze it in great detail, why the Lord's not in contact, or how he never becomes contaminated, or whatever. But we cannot really explain everything in great detail, because we don't understand the Supreme Lord and his spiritual powers, except we don't even understand the jiva at this point and its spiritual nature. So very difficult for us to in detail logically explain the Lord's relationship to the material world, because we don't understand the powers of the Supreme Lord and how they operate. But we get some sort of idea by statements in the Bhagavatam. And at least they give us a general idea to show the dependence of everything on the Lord, how it is different from the Lord, but how it operates under the Lord's direction with the Lord's particular purpose.
Design for each and every soul, whatever the soul deserves, he gives that and tries to uplift the soul. But basically this design, what the Lord sets up, how does it work, and where from he makes those standards? For every soul to advance in spiritual life, Lord gives a set of circumstances and...
We have the law of karma at work in the material world. And if the jivas don't surrender to the Lord, then they are subjected to the law of karma. And that law of karma acts equally on all living entities. But when you're a human being, then when you do the activities, you get results for it. And the results are defined in terms of the quality of the activity. If we want to go to scripture, then we can understand what type of activity gives what result. So all very nicely defined for us. Basically, of course, it means that you do activities very selfishly and cause unnecessary violence in the world, that you get bad karma, suffering. And you do good activities in the material world, pious activities, you get happiness in the material world. Well, basic principles are there. You follow that rule, then you get more happiness. If you don't follow the rule and you do a lot of violence, then you get more suffering. The whole purpose of that is to persuade the jiva through experience to avoid violence in the material world, to give up his selfishness for that purpose. And once he starts doing that, then he starts thinking a little bit, and then eventually he can understand he's not the body, and he can accept the Supreme Lord if he gets mercy of devotees, etc. The law of karma is there for the jivas in the material world to help purify them and help them follow proper conduct.
But we find that even in devotional life, devotees are also affected by this selfishness, avarice, greed, and so many other things which cause disturbances among the devotees. How does this happen, and how we can avoid these things?
Well, that is the impurity. Devotees start devotional service with some faith, but they have a lot of anarthas, they have a lot of material desires. Of course, if those material desires are too strong, they cannot practice bhakti properly. If they are to pacified to some extent, then they can begin the process of bhakti. And in the process of bhakti, then again, they may surface or whatever. The process of bhakti, however, is anartha nivritti, so it should destroy the anarthas. But if we don't practice bhakti properly and we commit aparads, then the destruction of anarthas does not take place properly, and then they may surface more in those individuals. So therefore they have to practice bhakti in the proper way, then they get proper results. If they don't practice properly, they get wrong results.
To see any object, we need sense, we need sense, and then we need sense devata, and we need this, that ultimately the Paramatma, who sanctions everything. So what is the activity or role of here sense devata? Because ultimately everything is depending on the Paramatma here.
Yeah, so they fulfill your karma.
The Paramatma can do the same thing.
Well, he does. He doesn't like to do everything directly, so he has Brahma to create the bodies for the living entities. He could do so directly, but he prefers to do it indirectly, so he's more aloof. So therefore, the devatas act on his behalf, rather than him personally involving. So the extent of his involvement is Paramatma, and then in the material world, the devatas are more involved with the jivas.
Another question was, you were explaining even this, when soul leaves the body, so he carries, he carries like a shuttle body, and there is a shuttle sense of the he carries. Shuttle senses.
Subtle senses and also, pranas.
Prana, yeah, carry. So, but what about this here, impression, how it goes? It goes with the shuttle body or senses?
What?
Impression, you know, in the material or whatever he accumulate.
Oh, that's in the subtle body.
And what is the activity?
Mind.
What is the activity then, what is the role of senses here, subtle senses here?
Well, even if you're not in your gross body, you can perceive things like in hellish existence or whatever. So you have perceptions, you can see, you can hear, you can feel. So use your subtle senses then.
So that means those are, we see the ghost, so they have a subtle senses.
Yeah.
With the subtle senses, they do all their activities.
Yeah.
Not that they don't have gross body, that's why we cannot see them.
Yeah. Or when you dream?
That's in subtle body.
Yeah.
Subtle senses. Huh?
Yeah. Or when the yogi travels out of his body? And he sees with subtle senses.
Gurumath, it is said that the Shakti and the Shaktiman are the same. And the Shakti acts under the guidance of the Shaktiman, the Lord. And it is also said that the devotional energy is also part of the Lord. That being the thing, how it allows the fallen soul to act in a way that it can commit apras or disobey in the spiritual activities. How these Shaktis of the Lord give way for the fallen soul to commit offenses or services in a wrong way?
Well, the Shaktis, they don't control anything. They're under the Supreme Lord ultimately. And in the material world, then the jiva has a body, and the body within the Shaktis are operating in the body, the pranas and the elements, and those are the Shaktis of the Lord also. But at that point, they're under that particular jiva, and he can use those Shaktis. Of course, ultimately, Supreme Lord as Paramatma is helping him do everything. So he can do activities to fulfill his desires, etc. And he can choose what acts he wants to do. He can choose how he wants to fulfill his desires, etc. So that's his own choice. And consequently, he gets karma and all sorts of, he picks up all sorts of bad habits or good habits or whatever that's stored in his mind, etc. So it's all the activities of the jiva and his choices and his experiences that produce all his good or bad qualities or whatever. So it's not directly the Supreme Lord, it's the jiva and his choices in the material world, using his body, etc.
I think in the Bhagavad Gita 13th chapter, there's an explanation regarding this, that jiva's activities in the material world. How jiva, living entities, engage in the activities. It is mentioned that, you know, the guna is the main cause here. When jiva come in contact with the gunas, and he does different kind of activities. So here guna is under the control of the Lord. So ultimately Lord is the cause for all the activities in the material world.
Yeah, ultimately yes. If there was no material world created by the Lord, then the jivas wouldn't have any enjoyment. They wouldn't perceive anything. And if they didn't have any bodies, which is also the will of the Lord, then they wouldn't perceive anything also. Yes, ultimately the Lord is responsible for that. But he's only acting because jivas want to enjoy the material world independently. So that's why he creates all material world, gives them material bodies, etc. So it's all because of their desires. And then he puts them in a particular body because of their past karmas. So jiva's desires, past karmas, etc. All that to combine. And the Lord creates material world and puts jivas in different bodies. And then they continue to do their activities, and according to their desire, they get different karmas.
That means, you know, although Lord does the activity, Lord is ultimate source, or He is ultimately, He only sanctions everything, but still He gives some little bit independence.
They have, the jivas have their independence, yes. So He lets them do different activities. And of course, because they're in ignorance, they do all the bad activities. And then they get the karma. And then as they become human beings, they should realize, this is bad activity, and I won't do it anymore. And then they get, and they progress by that.
Because of its own ignorance and the dominance of the three modes of material nature, the jiva acts in a very deceptive way. Sometimes it acts good, sometimes it acts bad, sometimes it follows the regulation, sometimes it doesn't follow. But what stage the jiva attains nirguna status? Only at prema?
Nirguna, yeah, when he's out of the material world. That's his nirguna state.